This is 5 o'clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, originating at WBAI. In today's program, the events in Union Square and throughout Manhattan, where thousands of people joined in a million hoodie march for the late Trayvon Martin. We'll also be looking at a nationwide action in regard to the reckless operation of the Vermont Yankee nuclear power plant that suffers from the same weaknesses as the Fukushima nuclear power plant system. This is 5 o'clock Shadow on the Pacific Radio Network. I'm Robert Knight in New York. And overnight, there was a massive protest on behalf of Trayvon Martin, the Florida youth, murdered by a vigilante and who was not prosecuted or thoroughly investigated by Florida police. We'll have late-breaking details on that case. We go now to the events as they unfolded in Union Square and throughout Manhattan as thousands of people marched for Trayvon.
Can I ask you why you're here today?
Yeah, I'm out here to lend some attention to what we really feel is a travesty of justice. There should not be a scenario where somebody could be shot without any weapon when someone was given a directive not to follow them and it turned out to be a pack of Skittles in their hands. Absolutely unacceptable. And for the gentleman to not have been arrested, the bare minimum, you should have been cuffed and taken down, booked, and sorted out at the precinct. And we don't understand why that police department down there seems to be protecting the gentleman, but we're excited about the fact that the FBI and the Justice Department has got involved. And at this particular point, what we're looking for now is a full investigation for the gentleman to be arrested and be processed, and for those witnesses who were originally interviewed by the police to now come back forward again and be re-interviewed and give new statements, because we understand that one of the witnesses was coerced, changed what they said. The whole thing smells. This is America, and we should have one justice system for everybody.
You're referring, of course, to Trayvon Martin. Here we are at Union Square, where there was a major gathering of the Occupy and other people of concern from the communities with hoodies and part of the Million Hoodie March. What is your impression of today's event?
Well, you know, it reminds me of my NAACP days. I'm a former director for Region 2, Northeast, Houston College Division. And I can remember at 15 years old getting involved with the Bensonhurst case. And then again, when we were pressuring companies about their involvement in apartheid. And I like the energy. I like the fact that social media has a major impact on what's going on, because we know that there are channels like Fox that didn't even really cover this story. And so I'm excited about what's happening, and I hope that this continues to put the pressure on the Justice Department that's necessary.
I understand that the parents of Trayvon Martin were here today. Did you get to see them? What did they say?
No, I did not have that opportunity because there were so many people out here. But we do know that the parents are very, very pleased with all of the national attention that this case is getting. And we do know that they're happy about the fact that their son with the 3.5 cumulative average is not portrayed in the media as some kind of thug. We wore hoodies today. It's those of us that put them on to show that it's an article of clothing and you should not be stereotyped by that. And so I can't speak on behalf of the family, but I can say from all accounts that I've heard that they're very pleased with all of the attention that they've gotten and that this case has gotten. And we really feel like in the next few days some significant things are going to happen. We're looking forward to that.
What is your name, sir?
Rob Robinson.
Rob Robinson, Robert Knight, WBAI Pacifica Radio. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's the sound of a metal gate with which the New York Police Department is locking up walkways into Union Square Park. We are now proceeding north at approximately 15th Street in an exterior walkway of Union Square Park. The police have installed metal gates, swivels, and chains with photogenic white-on-blue lettering identifying as Union Square Park that place in which people are intended to not be permitted to go, to occupy, to protest, or assemble under the terms of the First Amendment to the United States Constitution.
And we are going to pray.
And we are going to pray.
And we are going to stand.
And we are going to stand.
As one people.
As one people.
On behalf of.
On behalf of.
Trayvon Martin.
Trayvon Martin.
Let us go.
Trayvon Martin. Trayvon Martin. Trayvon Martin. Trayvon Martin.
Are we going to the UN?
Trayvon Martin. Trayvon Martin. Trayvon Martin.
Excuse me. I'm Robert Knight, WBAI Pacifica. Just
okay. Yes, Peter Heltzel with New York Theological Seminary.
I'm Bishop Ray Blanchett with Occupy Faith and the Clergy Campaign for Social and Economic Justice.
How has it been so far with the occupation for the Million Hoodie March and the parents?
You know, I want to say that the police have been helpful.
Yes, they have.
They have been helpful in keeping it together, especially the community affairs aspect of the NYPD. They have been very helpful. And it shows what police can do if the police are working with you and not against you.
Yes.
And they have really worked with us to make sure that we were able to march and that we were able to march successfully on behalf of Trayvon Martin.
Do you think that this means that the police commissioner is or is not in control of the police when there are violent incidents as on the 17th of March?
You had the commander on scene. The commander on the scene really had his discretion. And I think what happened there is while we spoke to the commander on scene, ourselves and Jumaane Williams and Yadonis Rodriguez, we spoke to them and the commanders, they gave us the way. They allowed the people to vent their frustration, their hurt, their pain.
You mean today?
Today. And I think that it was effective that they allowed that to happen. It was a natural outpouring of emotion that you felt from the people, and it was the spirit of these people, the collective spirit that was respected.
Today was for Trayvon Martin.
Right.
How did it go? What was the feeling or statements of the people about that tragedy?
There was a lot of hurt in this country. The civil rights movement started because of Emmett Till's murder.
That's right.
And this murder of Trayvon has catalyzed the nation about violence against black and brown bodies.
That's right.
And we will not, in the faith community, tolerate police murdering our black and brown children. And we as white folks need to admit that there's white supremacy in the system that has to be dismantled if we're going to see justice come in this nation.
Or at the least, white privilege.
Were you in touch with the family, the parents who were here today?
Well, we weren't in touch with them, but we prayed for them.
What's next?
Well, what's next is that we continue to agitate. We continue to ask for George Zimmerman to be arrested. And we continue to put pressure. National pressure. All over this country, people of conscience, people of humanity, people of good spirit, good people have always stood up for what was right in this country. And I think that these good people are coming together and they recognize the wrong that was done to Trayvon Martin and that there should not be a prosecution. We're not asking for special justice. We're asking for justice for Trayvon Martin.
Thank you both. Please re-identify yourself.
Peter Heltzel, H-E-L-T-Z-E-L. I'm the Associate Professor of Theology at New York Theological Seminary and Assistant Minister of Evangelism at Park Avenue Christian Church.
And I'm Bishop Dr. Raymond Blanchett. I'm the executive chair of the Clergy Campaign for Social and Economic Justice, and I'm on the member of the steering committee of Occupy Faith.
Thank you, Reverend Doctor. So I'm Robert Knight, WDAI Pacifica Radio.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I am Trayvon.
My son did not deserve to die.
No, he did not.
There's nothing that we can say that will bring him back, but I'm here today to assure that justice is served and that no other parents have to go through this again.
Yeah. A million hoodies strong!
Trayvon Martin! Trayvon Martin!
This is not about a black and white thing. This is about a right and wrong thing.
Yeah.
Justice!
Now!
Now!
We have to say, no matter who you are in America, black, white, Hispanic, it doesn't matter. We demand equal justice for our children's lives.
I know I'm black. I have earrings. I reek of Brooklyn. And I got a hoodie on.
Yes. Yes.
But I'm not a criminal.
Yes.
I'm a New York City Council member.
The people united will never be defeated.
My heart is in pain. But to see the support of all of you really makes a difference.
Who are you?
Trayvon Martin.
Who are you?
Trayvon Martin.
Trayvon Martin was you.
Yes. Yes.
Trayvon Martin did matter.
Yes.
And I just want New York to know that
we're not going to stop until we get justice for Trayvon.
Why are you here?
I'm here because I've been here since last night and when the police attacked us, but seeing what they did to Trayvon Martin's a lot worse, and I'm here to show solidarity for that. And I hope all the communities stick together and we not only put an end to police brutality, but police themselves.
Having been here overnight on the 20th of March, 2012, can you give me a summary of the different stages of the occupation, the eviction, the police action, the protest response?
Well, I mean, I was here since the Saturday night that we got pushed down here. I guess it might have been Sunday morning. Days have blurred because I've been up for like 40-something hours. But, we came here on the night of the eviction, started setting up things. We had cardboard on the ground, which they told us we couldn't have to keep off from the cold. Then about midnight, with no warning earlier prior in the day, on the day they evicted this park, they brought about 150 police in here and started clearing us out. And people reacted peacefully. The police did a job that was less brutal than the first eviction of, or the second eviction of Sakati, I guess it would be, the third if you count New Year's. And then they came in here and got us out, opened it back up in the morning, and now we're back with a lot more people. And I think if it keeps growing like this, because that's why they shut it down, because they knew we were growing.
The Occupy movement has been infinitely creative in terms of locations and tactics and such. Therefore, do you think Occupy can remain at Union Square, or what might be the next spring stage of the movement?
I think we're going to have to be mobile. And when they barricade one park, we're going to have to go to another park. We're also looking at squat houses, empty lots in a neighborhood close to here that we could take. And any space that's not being used by the capitalist system to squeeze profit out of it, anything they've abandoned for places where they can get cheaper labor and wages, slave wages, we're going to try to take over and expropriate. I mean, revolution's about land and taking property. So wherever we can go, we're going to go.
Thank you. What is your name?
Ellis Roberts.
Thank you, Ellis.
Have a good one.
Robert Knight, WBAI Pacifica.
And this is 5 o'clock shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, where you've been listening to Audio Verite coverage of the massive demonstration overnight in New York City on behalf of Trayvon Martin, the black youth murdered in Florida. We are now joined from Florida A&M University College of Law by Chilton Marshall. He's the president of the Black Law Students Association. And Shelton, you and your colleagues there have been very busy on this case. What is the latest?
Well, yes, our initial plan of action was to rally in support of Trayvon Martin and his family to bring awareness to the situation. We worked in concert with Parks and Crumbs and Mally Jackson, who are the legal counsel for the family on the matter. And we wanted to make sure we did something that was impactful, professional, and timely. And in doing that, we organized in conjunction with other student organizations in the Central Florida area a rally at the Sanford Criminal Justice Center. Our initial demand was for the release of the 911 tape. Second to that, calling for the arrest of George Zimmerman. And now we are calling for release of additional information as it pertains to the investigation so that we can have more transparency on the matter. Now, as you know, we rallied on Monday, and our next plan of action is to continue with support efforts in conjunction with additional rallies that are going on in the local area. On tonight, we'll be assisting with Al Sharpton in Sanford, Florida at Fort Mellon Park, where we'll be helping with the efforts there on tonight. We were called by Parks and Crumbs to assist of ushering the event and help hosting some, help making sure that goes over successfully. In addition, we have an event going on Monday at Macedonia Baptist Church in Edenville, which is an event put on behalf by the Policy Perkins Bar Association, where we'll have an open forum hosted by Roland Hampton and other local attorneys, and also the family of Trayvon Martin will be there as well to discuss openly the issues that they have been facing along this process. That is not all that's going on. We still have some additional events going on in conjunction with the NAACP and the National Black Law Students Association, who will be coming down next weekend as well. We'll be releasing a press release of the full itinerary of our events by weekend to update and notify everyone. That is what we're doing on the student side as far as organization and rallying on the behalf of Trayvon Martin. In relation to what we have now, as far as the case is related, we are putting together a petition to repeal the law that says stand your ground, which is one of the key things that they are asserting as a defense for George Zimmerman. And that is being done in conjunction with the students here at the College of Law and also with the National Black Law Student Association.
We had a major rally here in New York City overnight. It was a conjunction of people of many cultures, a great many black people joining up with the Occupy Wall Street movement here in New York City's Union Square. Is this the kind of thing that you and the others at the Black Law Students Association at Florida A&M are doing? Are you very busy coordinating things on a national level?
Yes. Well, since this is an issue that happened very locally to us, like pretty much our backyard, we've tried to be very, we try to make sure that we hit it at home as best we can, because a lot of the, because since we are able to go directly to the courthouse, speak directly to state attorneys like we did on Monday, and, you know, rally and show our support on, like, at ground zero of this movement, that's where our energies are focused right now. We are highly appreciative, and we applaud all the efforts of everyone nationally, because they are able to bring attention outside of the sphere, outside of the local sphere, which we are right here. And people like national organizations and Occupy Wall Street, who take upon this event, they bring the issue that was just that seemed to be an isolated event, or what Stanford police would like to be an isolated event, and they bring it on the national scene. So people and organizations and entities to do that, they expound the effort and make it larger, so that when we do rally and support here locally, we have more impact, and they know our voice is not limited to the scope of just the citizens in the local community.
Mr. Marshall, we have this item just in regard to the case. The chief of police of Sanford, Bill Lee, made an odd statement. He said that he's, quote, temporarily, quote, resigning because, and I want you to help us parse this statement that he made. It's the most nonsensical legal statement I've heard in quite a long time. You, as a law student, may have heard better, but please help us understand this statement. He says, as a former homicide investigator, a career law enforcement officer, and a father, I am keenly aware of the emotions associated with this tragic death of a child. I am also aware that my role as a leader of this agency has become a distraction from the investigation. I don't know where to begin. It's not a tragic death. It may be a criminal death. How can he be a distraction from an investigation that apparently does not exist?
You know what? Your reaction is probably just the same as mine. From my perspective, even those words, you know, words have a lot of meaning, and what's said and what's not said can say a lot as well. And what is stated, because, you know, the issue here was a lot of time, when it first started, no one wanted to say a statement. No one had anything to say, you know. And now when people are making statements, they're not really saying much. And to say that you're a distraction when you will play a key role in the furtherance of justice in your community, how are you a distraction? A distraction is a term that means that you stem away from the foundation of which you are, the role in which you are supposed to perform. And you yourself, you're not a distraction, Bill Lee. You are one of the core individuals who are supposed to effectuate justice on behalf of both sides, which includes Trayvon Martin and Bill Zimmerman. But in this case, you all chose not to seek justice for Trayvon, but you chose to seek concealment of the murder to assist George Zimmerman. So in this case, you're not a distraction. You're just a cop-out right now, and you're just trying to get yourself out the way. I mean, it is what it is, but to say that you're stepping down because you're a distraction, I think it's a cowardly move.
Well, he further says, I must temporarily remove myself from the position as police chief. And is that not an act of cowardice and dereliction of duty?
Yes, indeed. I mean, I completely agree with you on that matter.
you know, at times like these, in times of turmoil, you would think individuals who did make proper decisions in their role will step up and affirm their position with evidence by having with their background and showing that this, regardless of what you may feel or what you may perceive, it was the right decision at that point in time. But to step down amidst the heat of the situation and then, temporarily do so. So once, the smoke clears and you want to step back into the role, you're going to continue to effectuate the injustice that you did before.
Mm. You know, New York City has nothing to brag about with the police force here, with the egregious selectivity of black youth in the stop and frisk and harassment that is done here in New York City. But I've got to ask you about Florida. Is the police force in Sanford as racist and corrupt or incompetent as so many police forces are?
I will say those are some strong words to use. But I will put it in. In perspective for you. There are a lot of rules that, as an African American male, that you're told as far as when it relates to police and authoritative figures, because you're looked at in a different light. And that's something that's not necessarily spoken as much as inherent in the way in which you have to do things growing up as an African American male. Myself being in that category. You notice certain things, and particularly in Sanford, they have a history of having adverse dealings with the African American community, and particularly African American males. It's just common knowledge, man, and it's so sad to say that when you're driving through Sanford, make sure you have your driver's license, you have your insurance card, all your paperwork right beside you. Make sure that if your windows are tinted, that they're lower down to a certain level so they can see you. Make sure you're not going no more than 5 over the speed limit, because they'll have a reason for them to pull you over. And it's just all those little things that you have to do as an African-American male, which sounds so sad, so you're not deemed as a target. And it's not isolated to just Stanford. These type of things are here in a lot of communities, And it's sad to say, even like in New York, as you said, stop and frisk, it takes on different forms. And I think, but in this case with Trayvon Martin, it took the most extreme form of prejudice and suspicion and inherent fear of an individual who you know nothing of outside of the color of their skin. And it converted that into the death of a child. And so that is why we're speaking out today, because those inherent fears, those inherent ignorance, and ignorance towards another culture should not warrant anyone taking their life because they felt they were threatened.
You refer to a very important piece of this, and that is the I Was Scared legislation that basically gives to every gun-toting citizen of Florida the same exculpation that New York City police used for their murder of Amadou Diallo, shot 50 times or so, by saying that, well, he had a cell phone that looked like a gun. Now, This Florida law seems absurdly reckless, and it seems to be giving a green light to anyone to lie about a murder victim. Is that interpretation so far off base, or is that kind of how it works?
Well, it's sad to say that such a law exists. And as you stated, it seems as if this law gives the same rights that the police department does. You can say you saw suspicious character, you are in fear of your life, and you don't know if the other person had a weapon or what have you. But because you have a weapon, you can use that weapon because of your fear, and ultimately have the force to end their life.
It's like Bernie Getz here in New York, a similar situation of a civilian using deadly force with fear as a defense?
Yeah, Florida is a little bit different of a monster in itself. The issue with that law, yes, it does grant individuals that right. And when someone says they feel as though, if an individual feels their life is threatened, it's supposed to be an objective standard as far as how someone feels. But, you know, the word feels is vague. You know, and that's dependent upon the environment which they grew up in and their interactions with other people. you know, if I'm a man who's 175 pounds and I encounter another individual, a male who is 250 pounds, I may feel my life may be threatened because I'm smaller than him, you know, or vice versa. You don't know what the word feel means, you know, because feeling is subjective to the individual. And to grant that authority to carry a weapon and use it against another person underneath a feeling of threat, not even inside of the home, but in a public place, that's a scary situation. And as we know, as we see now, it was not used, that type of law, which is not applicable to the Trayvon Martin case, mind you, can have ramifications that can lead to a lot of senseless death.
How well are you proceeding in mobilizing legislators or whatever process is necessary to repeal that law?
Yeah, as I said earlier, a lot of students here at the College of Law are rallying. We have multiple petitions. Are going out to different locations. We're sending a petition to the state attorney's office. We already took multiple petitions to the Sanford Police Department, and we are now formulating a petition that is going to Tallahassee to repeal that law. The two organizations that I currently know of, but not limited to just us, is the National Black Law Students Association, the NAACP, and all the local entities who have been very on this matter are all formulating petitions to repeal the Sanger Brown law, which they are asserting is defense for George Zimmerman.
Well, I thank you for the insight you bring us today. We're speaking with Shelton Marshall. He is the president of the Black Law Students Association of Florida Agricultural and Mechanical University College of Law. And for those listening in New York and nationwide, what can people do more to help achieve justice in this and future cases?
Well, Father, first of all, thank you for your time and allowing me to express my perspective on this matter. What we can do in the future is to make sure that we bring awareness to situations of this nature. One of my main premises is that justice for Trayvon is justice for all. This is a matter that transcends not only the Black community, but it transcends to all various cultures. And it highlights how us as Americans cannot be ignorant. We cannot have feelings of suspicion towards individuals just based upon the color of their skin or the differences that they may have. We have to align ourselves to bring about an awareness that our differences, that we are more common than different. And if we feel as though we are being threatened, make sure that threat is substantiated by something outside of our inherent ignorance.
Well, I thank you, and I gain some comfort that you and your colleagues and fellow students are entering the field of law. You will be much needed in the future. And thank you once again. We've been speaking with Shelton Marshall, Esquire. He is the president of the Black Law Students Association at Florida A&M Agricultural and Mechanical University College of Law. This is 5 O'Clock Shadow. I'm Robert Knight in New York.
After Police Department, lines being recorded. Sean?
Hey, we've had some break-ins in my neighborhood, and there's a real suspicious guy. It's Retrieview Circle. The best address I can give you is 111 Retrieview Circle. This guy looks like he's up to no good, or he's on drugs or something. It's raining, and he's just walking around looking about.
Okay, and this guy, is he white, black, or Hispanic?
He looks black.
Did you see what he was wearing?
Yeah, a dark hoodie, like a gray hoodie, and either jeans or sweatpants and white tennis shoes. He's here now. He was just staring.
Oh, he's just walking around the area?
Looking at all the houses.
Okay.
Now he's just staring at me.
Okay. And he said it's 1111 Retrieve You or 111?
That's the clubhouse.
That's the clubhouse. Do you know what the... He's near the clubhouse right now?
Yeah, now he's coming towards me.
Okay.
He's got his hand in his waistband. And he's a black male.
Okay. How old would you say he looks?
He's got a button on his shirt. Late teens.
Late teens, okay.
Mm-hmm. Something's wrong with him. Yeah. He's coming to check me out. He's got something in his hands. I don't know what his deal is.
Okay, just let me know if he does anything, okay?
Over here.
Yeah, we got him on the way. Just let me know if this guy does anything else.
Okay. These assholes, they always get away. Yeah. When you come to the clubhouse, you come straight in and make a left. Actually, you would go past the clubhouse.
Okay, it says on the left-hand side from the clubhouse?
No, you go in straight through the entrance, and then you make a left. Yeah, you go straight in, don't turn and make a left. Shit, he's running.
He's running? Which way is he running?
Down towards the other entrance of the neighborhood.
Okay, which entrance is that he's heading towards?
The back entrance.
Are you following him?
Yeah.
Okay, we don't need you to do that.
Okay.
All right, sir, what is your name?
George. He ran.
All right, George, what's your last name?
Zimmerman.
And George, what's the phone number you're calling from?
407-435-2400.
All right, George, we do have him on the way. Do you want to meet with the officer when they get out there?
Yeah.
All right, where are you going to meet with them at?
If they come in through the gate, tell them to go straight past the clubhouse. And straight past the clubhouse and make a left. And then they go past the mailboxes. You'll see my truck.
Okay, what address are you parked in front of?
I don't know. It's a cut-through, so I don't know the address.
Okay, do you live in the area?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what's your apartment number?
It's a home. It's 1950. Oh, crap. I don't want to give it out loud. I don't know where this kid is.
Okay, do you want to just be with him right near the mailboxes, then?
Yeah, that's fine.
All right, George. I'll let him know to meet you with you out there.
Actually,
okay?
Could you have him call me, and I'll tell him where I'm at?
Okay. Yeah, that's no problem.
You need my number or you got it?
Yeah, I got it. It's 407-435-2400.
Yeah, you got it.
Okay, no problem. I'll let them know to call you when they're in the area.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
911, do you need police, fire, medical?
Maybe both. I'm not sure. There's just someone screaming outside.
Okay, what's the address that they're near? Okay, and is it a male or female?
It sounds like a male.
Okay, and you don't know why?
I don't know why. I think they're yelling help, but I don't know. Just send someone quick. Say, stop.
Okay. Does he look hurt to you?
I can't see him. I don't want to go out there. I don't know what's going on. So they're sending.
So you think he's yelling help?
Yes.
All right. What is your number?
Just, there's gunshots.
You just heard gunshots?
Yes.
How many?
This one. Jimmy, get down. No, come here.
Is he no longer yelling?
No one, I don't know. Jeremy, get in here now. Jeremy, get up here.
All right, is he right outside?
Yeah, pretty much out the back, yeah.
Is he in front of it or behind that address?
He's behind my house.
Okay.
Just stay away from the windows.
I don't hear him yelling anymore. Do you hear anything?
No, I don't because I'm hiding upstairs. There was a gunshot right outside our house.
Do you hear any vehicles leaving or anyone else? Do you hear anything right
There's people yelling out there, but I don't want to go down there. So.
Okay, multiple people are yelling now?
Yeah.
All right, well, we do have officers on the way. Just call us back if you do hear or see anything else suspicious, like any vehicles leaving or anything like that, okay?
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Bye.
This is 5 o'clock shadow. Those are the 9/11 emergency calls in regard to the murder of Trayvon Martin in Florida. And they raise several important questions. Number one, why is Trayvon crying? What happened? Number two, why did George Zimmerman say under his breath, effing coons? According to the latest acoustic analysis of those 911 phone calls. And indeed, if that is what he said, what associations might he be involved with that use such an archaic racist word as coon? This is 5 o'clock shadow. Coming up, Nuclear Vermont. This is 5 o'clock shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network. We move now from Florida to Vermont and elsewhere across the country where there were coordinated actions in protest of this first day beyond its scheduled lifespan of the Vermont Yankee Nuclear Power Plant. There are actions at the headquarters of Entergy. There are actions at the scene of the plant, which has disturbing similarities to the engineering construction of those at Fukushima Daiichi. And we are now joined by Linda Gunter. She is with Beyond Nuclear. And welcome, Linda. You know, we also had planned to speak with your colleague in Vermont, Kevin Camps, who was at the scene of the plant. And I spoke with him a short time ago. He was awaiting booking. He was being processed by the police. We were not able to get through a minute ago, so he may be in jail or during that process of being arrested. But I'm glad to have you with us from Washington, D.C. Tell me what you did today.
Thank you, Robert. Well, I just spoke to Kevin, and he apologizes that he couldn't be on the show, but they were about to take his phone away, which was going to make it difficult for him to talk to you.
I hope that his data is encrypted.
I think it's a temporary measure. It sounded to me, Vermont was obviously the scene of the biggest action today. There were more than 1,000 people, I gather, who marched from Brattleboro to the Entergy offices, which they very in a very cowardly move, closed for the day well in advance, you know, knowing that this was coming. Kevin said that about 90 people volunteered to be arrested, but that he the sense he got was that they were going to book and release them. So that appears to be what happened. There were three simultaneous actions, actually, today against Entergy, the owner of Vermont Yankee, and numerous others around the country. One in White Plains, New York, where they also have offices, where five people were arrested. And then down in New Orleans, which is the corporate national headquarters, eight individuals from New England went down there and occupied the offices of Entergy. They went into the building. They put yellow police tape up. They hung banners. And they were all arrested. And I gather they are currently going through that process also and will be released today, but some of them will be arraigned tomorrow, and there may well be a trial later on. So there's been a significant day of solidarity to support the people and the governments of Vermont who chose in February of 2010 in a vote in the Senate to close this dangerous reactor on its due date, which was yesterday. Entergy decided to push for a license renewal, and our lapdog regulator, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, duly handed one over 10 days into the Fukushima nuclear disaster. The Vermont reactor is the identical GE Mark I boiling water reactor design to those that blew up in Japan.
This is completely undiscovered territory. There has been no lifespan of the embrittled and aging nuclear reactors that should be so recklessly extended. And what is it about the Nuclear Regulatory Commission that allows this kind of risk to be relicensed?
That's a very good question. You know, we ask ourselves that all the time, how they sleep at night, knowing the dangerous condition that these reactors are in. But they've never said no to a license extension. Every single reactor, and I apologize, I don't remember the exact number, but I think it's at least 50, that have asked for an extension have been granted that extension. The most outrageous one, actually, just happened fairly recently, which is the Seabrook reactor in New Hampshire. And in fact, a number of the people that were in New Orleans today were members of the Clamshell Alliance, which, if you go back to the 70s, was the first anti-nuclear power movement in this country, specifically to stop Seabrook being built. Seabrook asked for a 20-year license extension, 20 years before the current one expires. That's like going to your doctor and saying, will you give me a clean bill of health for when I'm 20 years older? It's just so outrageous. And we actually challenged that in court, mainly to show that they have not looked at the potential for offshore wind in particular to meet those energy needs 20 years from now. But again, you know, that we do not have an ally in our regulator. They are a rubber stamp organization for the nuclear industry. Most of their funding comes from dues levied from the nuclear industry. So there's a huge conflict of interest there to begin with. It's just not in their interest to challenge the nuclear industry, but they're gambling with the lives of Americans every single day by allowing these plants to continue to operate.
You know, we're big fans of the Entergy Corporation here in New York City because it supports local businesses in the operation of the Indian Point nuclear facility. What is it about the Entergy Corporation that is worthy of such focused protest?
Well, you know, they have completely decided to disregard states' rights. So I think it speaks to a fundamental tenet of democracy, which is that a state in whose territory this reactor sits should be allowed to decide whether or not they want to deal with a plant that has already leaked radioactivity into the water, it's already had a fire, it's already had structural collapses. You know, whether it's the same design as Japan, so it's got this very flawed containment system, which is vulnerable to the kinds of hydrogen explosions that we saw in Japan, they should have the right to decide whether they want to risk the lives of their people and the environmental integrity of their state or not. And they chose not to. And Entergy has just ridden roughshod over that with the support of the federal government and with the support of the courts, which they went to and were found in their favor. So the state's actually appealing. So this is going to drag on through the law courts for a long time. But in the meantime, the reactor, which should have shut yesterday, continues to operate. And it's just an unacceptable sort of blatant disregard for the will of the state. So New Orleans, at least, they basically went to trespass because they say that Entergy are really the criminal trespassers, and they're acting on a sort of, with a kind of outlaw mentality. And that the only way now to stop this behavior, since we don't get support from our government or the regulator, is to take it into our own hands and stand up and be counted in a very peaceful, civil, you know, way. It's all done with a vow of nonviolence and with a great deal of integrity, I should say, too.
Linda, it is really good to hear a socially constructive use of the term states' rights in regard to local safety, given the history of the United States of America. And how many states or local districts or municipalities are attempting to legislatively challenge the licensing and operation of nuclear power plants across the country?
Well, I believe that Vermont was the first state to vote in both houses to shut the plant when its license expired. You know, they didn't try to just unilaterally close the plant, but since the license was due to expire just over 2 years from when they took the vote, they felt this was a good compromise. I'm not aware of that happening anywhere else at the moment, and I'm not sure who's, you know, next up for license renewal, but I do think that the example that's been shown by the Vermont people hopefully will inspire others in other communities. And we've actually at Beyond Nuclear launched a campaign called Free the Fukushimas, and that's sort of taking off in a way. For example, the Pilgrim plant in Plymouth now has a Freeze Pilgrim campaign. That's another marked one, just like Fukushima. And we're trying to launch that in the communities where this design especially is in operation to really start to raise awareness of what people are living near and what could happen. And that it happened in Japan, not a third world country, a highly technological country. You can't prepare for a disaster like this. There's really nothing you can do once it unfolds. And you could potentially allow the land around there to be uninhabitable for the foreseeable future. You know, in a state like Vermont, which is heavily dependent on agriculture, can't afford that.
Linda Gunter, the President of the United States, Barack Obama, has been going around saying that nuclear power is essential. It is clean energy. It is greenhouse gas friendly. And that is a part of his opening up of offshore drilling, of ocean drilling, and his partnership with both the nuclear and the oil industries. Are you happy with the energy development that policy that is coming out of the White House?
I'm sure that's a rhetorical question. I mean, you know, the charitable thing is to say that he's woefully misinformed. But unfortunately, I doubt that somehow. And the promise of change that we heard has not been delivered on the energy front at all by this administration. It's absolutely indistinguishable, really, from the Bush administration that came before it. And in some cases, I gather worse when it comes to the amount of oil drilling that's going on. The nuclear position is just disingenuous. And what's interesting, though, is that the Nuclear Energy Institute, which is the trade arm of the industry, has launched a massive advertising campaign just this week, which we reckon is a good sign that they're, you know, running a little scared because they're losing popularity quite rapidly in the wake of the Fukushima disaster. And some of the claims in those ads are as inaccurate as Obama's statements about safe nuclear, which is an oxymoron like clean coal. And they're talking about that it's homegrown energy, which is a complete lie, frankly, because 94% of the fuel that you need for nuclear plants, which is uranium, is imported. So talk about dependency on foreign something. You know, we have a huge dependency on foreign uranium, which, by the way, is mined mostly on indigenous lands in faraway places by poor people who take the entire consequences of health problems and none of the benefits.
Well, Linda Gunter, that's where we'll have to leave it for today, but tell people how to help with your work at Beyond Nuclear.
Absolutely. We'd be happy for you to visit us at www.beyondnuclear.org or on Facebook, and you can see all the action on our March Against Nuclear Madness page on Facebook as well, which lists all the protests going on all around the world right now.
Well, Linda Gunter, thank you. And please give our best regards to your criminal friend, Kevin Kamps, arrested at the protest at Vermont Yankee today.
Good kinds of criminals. Okay, thanks so much.
All right. This is 5 O'Clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, originating at WBAI. I'd like to give thanks for production to Thiago Peroso, also CNN, also for engineering to Michael G. Haskins. And we also solicit your advice, questions, queries, tips, leaks, and suggestions with an email to theshadow, T-H-E-S-H-A-D-O-W, theshadow@wbai.org. And thanks also to Shelton Marshall of the Black Law Students Association at Florida A&M for the update on the case of Trayvon Martin. And that concludes today's program. Thank you for listening. I'm Robert Knight in New York for 5 O'Clock Shadow.